Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here. Today we get a joyful experience, and that is to talk to author Eric Metaxas. And Eric is a Dietrich Bonhoeffer expert. He's written the biography named Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy. And Eric, I have to tell you, the moment I saw the title of your book years ago, I was excited to read it. And particularly the last part of the title, the subtitle, Spy, just really intrigued me. So thank you for coming on and talking with us today.
It's my pleasure, my honor. Thanks for having me.
So Eric, you're a New York guy. Where is New York City, New York State right now in the middle of mandates? Are you guys all out of your COVID mandates, or are you in the middle of things?
We're not out of the COVID mandates. It's kind of funny because it sort of takes a lot to make me mad. But boy, oh boy, it is super crazy to be living in a city where you pay very high rent and to not be able to go into a restaurant or to a concert or to whatever it is unless you get the vaccine. This is madness. And it's kind of the larger subject, right? What is freedom? What is our freedom? I mean, to Americans in particular, but now obviously to Canadians because of what's been happening with the truckers and so on and so forth, you really begin to realize that people died for freedom, and we've had so much of it that we don't think about it very much. Well, when governors or mayors or prime ministers show their ignorance on the subject of whether people can govern themselves roughly or what their role is, it's a fascinating thing because it's a wake-up call. So to be in a place like New York and to think that I can't go in restaurants, you think, this could never happen in my lifetime. This is absolute madness. All of this is madness. But I think a lot of people are waking up. I really believe a lot of people are coming to faith in the Lord as a result of this. In other words, when things get this crazy, people start to ask the bigger questions. So I'm generally optimistic. But it, of course, we're in a battle. The level of madness, the lockdowns, the vaccine mandates, the vaccines themselves, the misinformation, it's unlike anything any of us has ever seen. And of course, it brings us eventually to the subject of my Bonhoeffer book, because when I wrote that book, I could sort of smell this stuff on the horizon, but never did I dream, whoomp, we'd be right in the middle of something like this in places like Canada and the United States. Surely that wouldn't happen here. And yet here we are.
Well, up here in Ontario, I'm in Southern Ontario, which is probably the most southern tip of Canada, you know, kind of on par east to west with Chicago and Boston, just a little bit north of them. But we've been in lockdown now for 2 years almost fully, some relaxation during the summer months, but churches, we've lost, we got a few constitutional challenges before our courts. We've lost some minor court hearings where men have been charged for keeping their church open. A number of us pastors continue to face our court date. So I face up to $300,000 in fines and up to 3 years for simply keeping my church open on a day when my entire...
Well, let me interrupt and just say, God bless you. Oh. Because there are a number of pastors like you in California. And I just want to say, it is a heroic thing. It's the right thing. You get to live out your faith and you get to trust God and you get to inspire people. People are inspired when they see people living out their faith. They think, wow, he really believes this stuff. So I just want to interrupt you and say thank you, because there are so many who have not done what you and other pastors have done. And I just want to say, attaboy, well done, and God bless you. It's vital that folks like you, you know, stand up like this. So that's a, you know, big part of what I talk about. So it just makes me happy to know that you're in the middle of it.
Well, and that's partly why we reached out to talk to you. Because I was refreshing through the introduction of the 10th anniversary, and you mentioned that part of your exploration into Bonhoeffer's life was this I can't remember the exact phrase that you used, but it was like this, I wanted to come as an open observer and see where the evidence led me. And so in calling you up and saying, would you come and talk to us up here in Canada about Bonhoeffer and his life and about what you learned as you explored his life, part of me was hesitant in saying, well, what if Eric gets on and says, Bonhoeffer would never do any of this type of thing, because literally that is what we're facing here in Canada. In Canada, the church is very divided. There is a small number of churches that, you know, you might consider open churches or free churches. And then the vast majority of churches remain completely compliant. And I would say that within the last 14 days, I have been publicly rebuked by another pastor saying, you know, equating what you guys are doing to the stuff that Dietrich Bonhoeffer started doing in the 30s in Germany, that is just a false comparison. That's just, yeah. They've actually said that is maligning the memory of Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Well, why don't you tell them to go jump in a lake? I got to be honest with you.
I appreciate
we have that. The same thing here. There are tons and tons of pastors, evangelicals, who are sure they know way more about Bonhoeffer than I do. And I'm not pretending that I know everything. But listen, we have to have grace for each other. But when you're in a fight, you can't worry too much about what other people think. I have taken all kinds of grief from many of my public stances. And I think, you know, I've been blessed not to have to do that for most of my life, but why should other people have to take it on the chin? The fact of the matter is, when you speak the truth, I mean, look, you can go back to the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah. When they spoke the truth, mostly the people of God told them, shut up or we're going to kill you. So the idea that if you're some kind of an evangelical Christian, you're just on board with whatever's right, why would you be any different than the people of ancient Israel? Why would you be any different than the Germans who were Christians, who disagreed with Dietrich Bonhoeffer on what he did? So it's sort of complicated, and yet it's sort of simple. God calls us to fight. There is some very bad theology. I know there's tons of it in Canada, because I know Canada is a lot like the United States, and even worse on this issue, that we kind of think being a Christian means being nice. Well, no. To love someone, to lay down your life for someone, this is very radical, and often it doesn't look very nice. Fighting for freedom, people who went to war with the Nazis, people who died as Christians in the Soviet Union, I mean, there's a lot of persecution and a lot of suffering. So for us to simply think, well, we can escape that if we're nice, they'll like us and they'll buy our message, then you have to kind of ask, what message are you even selling at that point? It doesn't seem like a very muscular, palpable message. And I kind of think that's part of the problem, is that we've been so blessed, as I say, in the United States particularly, and in Canada, so blessed with freedom and really all of the blessings that people around the world dream of, relative prosperity. So we haven't seen suffering. And to have a lot of Christians, as I say, in the United States, and of course in Canada and other Western countries, confuse being nice, there's a moment when you have to say, this is wrong and we're going to dissent. So the question is, to go back to the Bonhoeffer issue, most people told Bonhoeffer, shut up. You're a hothead. Relax. Hitler is, he's a one-term Führer. It's not that bad. Just go along with whatever it is. And Bonhoeffer said, no, I have a conscience, and I'm supposed to fear God, and I'm supposed to do what God calls me to do, and to speak up when I see injustice or when I see things leaning toward injustice. So for people not to understand that grave injustices are being done by the governments of Canada, Australia, the United States, if you don't see that, you're not loving the people who are suffering under those injustices, under those mandates. The fact of the matter is, our hearts should go out to them too. If you're a pastor, you need to think maybe the greatest thing a person could do is come to church. Maybe they need that kind of ministry. Oh, but the government is telling me, no, we need to shut down. Not only is the science and the actual health issue contrary to what we're often being told, but even if those things were true, we're still supposed to be free. This is not the bubonic plague. And the brutality and the tone of people like Prime Minister Trudeau, people like some of the governors of our blue states, Gavin Newsom or whatever, they seem to be contemptuous of people who would dissent with their point of view. And that tells you most of what you need to know. If you're elected in a free country or a state, you're supposed to understand that you serve at the pleasure of the people, that you serve them and you represent them. They are your bosses. And so to have contempt for those people really is to betray that, you know, your model of governance is not about, it's not about freedom. It's about we're the elites, we have the power, and we're going to make you do these things and you better go along with it. That should bother anybody, but it should really bother a Christian, because it's one thing for somebody to tell me to do something, but when they're telling everyone to do it, I have to think, how is this affecting all the kids that can't go to school, all of the elderly, and people that they're deeply blessed when they get to go to church? What about those people? What about the people committing suicide because the lockdown and all this kind of stuff is going on? So we have to stop pretending that this is an open and shut case. It's a complicated case. I know where I come down on it, but I'm just grieved to think how many people have fundamentally misunderstood the Bonhoeffer story. What I keep thinking of lately is it's like in the Roman Empire, all you had to do is just take a little pinch of incense and give it to Caesar. That's all, and we'll leave you alone. Just do it. Shut up and do it. Christian said, no, I'd rather die. I will not do that. When we're talking about the vaccine, and people, even Christians, aren't talking about this issue, but the main issue, which we should talk about before anything else, is that these vaccines, every single one of them, are the result, one way or the other, some very directly and some less directly, but of aborted children. Now, that for Christians should be front and center. If a vaccine was made in any way I could trace back to an aborted child, what if I could trace it back to somebody who was murdered during the civil rights time in America? I could say that Emmett Till or somebody was murdered by a mob of whites, but you know what? We can use his cells or whatever. In other words, there's immediately a moral issue just on that. So we could talk about nothing else. We could just focus on that. On my program, I've had a guy named John Zmirak, who's written a lot about this at stream.org. People should look him up, Zmirak. But that alone should make Christians seriously think about this. But a lot of Christian leaders have kind of given that a pass. And so I think a lot of other Christians have gotten the idea that there's no problem with the vaccines just based on that. So there's a lot here, but I really do think that we're in a battle and the Lord is with us in the battle. And if we think we would have done the right thing during Bonhoeffer's time, I have to say to people, so what are you sacrificing now? Are you willing to get a fine? Are you willing to face these things? Are you willing to fight? If you're not, I would say you're just like the German Christians who kind of went along. They weren't maybe evil people, but to go along with injustice, to look the other way when these injustices are being done, when pastors are being arrested, if you look the other way at that point, if you don't stand with that pastor, I think you're a bum. You're not a hero. You're somebody who you will live to regret your cowardice. And so it is love to say to those people, don't do that mistake. Don't make that mistake. Stand up now. Stand with these pastors. It's the right thing to do.
I want to jump in on a word you use there, and that you use the word confusing. And that this is a confusing time a little bit. And I want to connect that with the events of 1933. And so, you know, in my study of the rise of the Third Reich and just the speed at which things were changed, words like the emergency decree, which was given for the protection of the people and the state, words
Precisely.
Like the Malicious Yeah. Practices Act that limited misinformation, words like the Aryan Clause of April 1st, 1933, where it talked about for the reconstruction of the professional civil service. And then finally, of course, the Enabling Act on March 23rd, 1933. Immediately, and that's kind of really why I want to talk to you about maybe that particular year and what you saw when you researched, because it just looked like it's the same stuff we're facing today.
Unfortunately, Michael, it is. Yeah. It is the same thing. The fact of the matter is, evil never says, "I'm evil. I'm the devil. Follow me." It's always couched in terms to be a counterfeit, to fool people. People don't say, "I'm lying. This is a lie." They make it sound very plausible, very reasonable. You know, you just have to do this little pinch of incense to Caesar. That's all. That's all. And they ask a little more of you every day, and you sell your soul a little piece at a time. Now, look, what happened with the Emergency Act in Canada? What happened? This is how people in an otherwise free society make it less free, right? They can't just say, "I have no reason. I'm gonna behave like a tyrant." They have to make it sound plausible. And of course, the news media have become compliant. And so when people do these things, they say it's for your safety. I mean, people in Germany were being told, "Look, it's for your own good that we're demonizing the Jews." They wouldn't say demonizing, but we're marginalizing them. It's for your own good. It's for the good of the country. The fact of the matter is, people with discernment see through it, and then they have an obligation to speak up. I thank God that the truckers and others in Canada have said, "Enough is enough. We're going to fight. We're going to make noise." That is a sign of great health. I want to say it's a sign of great health. And if you lose your nerve, it's only when you lose your nerve that you give the tyrants or those behaving like tyrants the opportunity to win. I think if you keep pushing, the fact of the matter is that most people in places like Canada and the United States, we're trying to raise our kids, we're working jobs, we see craziness when it emerges. We know when somebody's out of touch. We know when something is draconian, when something is just, much more brutal, when it's an overreaction. And I think most Americans, and it seems to me that many Canadians, they're waking up. They're saying, this doesn't seem right. You're asking too much of us. And then your response betrays the fact that you're afraid of the truth. You're afraid of everybody getting their say. You're having to, label things misinformation or disinformation. That's not healthy when a government starts doing that. And my radio show, the Eric Metaxas Show, which we had on YouTube, was wiped off of YouTube. Why? Because I had a few conversations, not every day, but a number of conversations that seemed to cross lines for the Marxist folks running YouTube and saying, no, you can't do that. And I thought, wow, even if I didn't know what to think about vaccine passports or any of this stuff, their actions would push me to think they've got something to hide. They're not playing nicely. They're the ones that aren't playing nicely. If they were playing nicely, obviously, then I would say, well, maybe I'm being a little harsh. Let me think this through. But it's just the opposite. They have been brutal. And I think that we have to understand, during what happened in Germany in the 30s, it was the same kind of thing. You have a government that was taking advantage of the goodwill of the people. In other words, it knew that if it took the gloves off and revealed itself the Germans, they were too good and too Christian, really, to go along with it. So it had to be done a little piece at a time. Hitler was brilliant. His lieutenants were brilliant. They understood that we've got to go carefully. We've got to neutralize the church a little bit at a time, and then eventually we will seize power. So I say to people, whatever freedom you have today, your voice, your money, your time, your talent, whatever you have, use it for God's purposes right now. Because if you don't, you may not have it tomorrow. People who have money to give to God's purposes, to the purposes of freedom, to the truckers, if you don't do that now, it strikes me that the government may take the money from you. You know, they'll take your guns, they'll take your money, they'll take your freedom, they'll take you. You have to use what you have now. And I don't mean it's time to use guns, but what I'm saying is that if you don't speak up now, tomorrow, you may not be able to speak. I mean, I have a platform now. I'm on social media, whatever, but my YouTube platform doesn't exist. So I have to think, well, maybe while it existed, I needed to be louder. Whatever voice people have, whatever opportunity people have to get in the streets, to demonstrate, you have to use it now. Because we've seen where this goes. You look at places like China, you look at Tiananmen Square. It's vital that people understand the parallels. And again, when we're talking about Bonhoeffer, I really do believe that God in his mercy gave me the Bonhoeffer story to tell as a warning for the church today, to say that if you do not stand up, this is exactly what happens. These were good people. The German Christians, they were not satanic, they were not atheists, they were not hypocrites. These were, many of them were good people trying to go along, trying to do the right thing, but they weren't discerning what was happening. And this prophetic voice, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, arose to tell them, you need to wake up now. And they didn't listen to him, just as they didn't listen to the prophets of old. And then years later, people say, hey, Bonhoeffer was a great guy. If he were alive today, I would certainly be on his team. And you think, well, are you on his team now? Are you speaking up for the pastors being arrested, being fined? There are many of them in the United States, in California. My friend Mike McClure in San Jose, Calvary Church up there, has been through hell. A lot of them have been through hell. Have you stood with them? Many, 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 many pastors in the United States have not. They've looked the other way. They said, this isn't my fight. Let them take it on the chin. I'm going to ride this one out. This is a real moment for people of faith to make a decision and to understand God is looking at us. God looks at us when we do these things. He's watching us. He's depending on us to speak the truth.
I have three thoughts just coming out of your comments there. First of all, our prime minister and his Liberal Party, if you go to their full platform of what they ran on during the last election and what they are promising to do on their website, one of those things is to punish pro-life organizations for being deceptive and for using misinformation. That's actually on their platform. Canadian churches ought to be fighting and screaming just on that and be warned, because exactly as you said, when we hear misinformation or ideas of censorship, we put together a YouTube channel called Liberty Coalition Canada, and we had 4 or 5 episodes, and our third episode hit 500,000 views because it was the first time that Canadian doctors spoke out. And so we had a number of doctors say, we really need some help. You guys have started working hard at this, so can you release our video? And so we had done 3 measly little episodes. I had like 400 viewers or something like that. And this went viral. It just went crazy. After our 7th episode or 11th episode, YouTube completely shut us down. And all I was doing was, one, as a pastor, I was giving some Christian analysis to the news. And number two, I was investigating. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a biologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. So I was talking to doctors and nurses who felt silenced by the mainstream, who were giving a very respectful, informative second opinion. And so that got us canceled. I want to ask you, what do you think, you know, you said Bonhoeffer, if he were alive today, I would be on his team, or that people would say that. Like, I wonder if Bonhoeffer would still be running around feeling like the prophet who was not being listened to. Like, what do you think he would have to say to mainstream?
There's nothing new under the sun. I just want to say what you just said about Prime Minister Trudeau, that they said they're going to go after pro-life organizations. If the church is the real church of Jesus Christ, it will stand up against that and fight against that with everything it has. I know there are many, it's always the temptation, the devil's voice, just comply. Don't die on this hill. Live to fight another day. I want to say to every pastor in Canada, that's the hill to die on. You can forget about everything else we've discussed, but the demonization of Christians, the demonization of people who dare to say life in the womb is sacred, the demonization of those people, it tells you everything you need to know. And if you do not fight that with all your might and main, you are not doing the Lord's will. That is what God calls us to, self-sacrificial actions that say, yes, I may lose something. I may lose some friends. This may be a battle, but it's the right thing. It's God's battle. And so, you know, here you have a prime minister who's acting in these incredibly ugly ways, but he has already said effectively where he stands. In the United States, the Democratic Party has gone in the same direction. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there were plenty of Christians that could be Democrats, but they have now pushed God out dramatically, very dramatically. You know, I was going to say that the book behind me, Is Atheism Dead? That's my new book. And it really is, in many ways, a joyful a book of apologetics. How it shows how science and biblical archaeology and so many things are dramatically revealing the existence of God, the truth of the Bible, and on and on and on. But what's behind the book, Is Atheism Dead, is the idea that when you take God out, when you push God out, when you push faith out, when you start pushing people of faith out of the public square, as Trudeau and Biden and others have done, always giving lip service, but nonetheless doing it very clearly, when that happens, it makes evil possible. And Solzhenitsyn, who suffered horribly at the hands of the atheist regime in the Soviet Union, he was a prophet, and he spoke about this, and he said, when you asked old people, how did this all happen? How did this happen? This horror of the Bolsheviks and this oppression where they were just murdering and torturing Christians. How did everything happen? How did it begin? And the answer was always, it began when men forgot God, when men pushed God out. And so, unfortunately, there are some very serious parallels here. When you begin to push God out, when you side with a group that basically says we're against the Christian worldview. It could be issues of sexuality. There's so many issues now where it's not simply that somebody has a different point of view, but they're trying to demonize those who have a biblical view. And if a pastor or a Christian doesn't understand that now is the time to fight, now is the time to speak truth, those people will stay asleep until it's too late. And then they'll wake up like Martin Niemöller, the great pastor in Germany, who woke up and realized it's too late. Now, when I speak up, you know, they arrested him and put him in a concentration camp for 8 years. He could have fought. If Martin Niemöller had woken up in time, if he had heard what God was saying through Bonhoeffer, the church might have been the decisive factor, probably would have been, in making the Holocaust, for example, never happen. But the church was quiet just long enough that when they finally woke up, it was too late. We're in a moment like that right now. The church in the West is in that moment right now. I believe God will give us the victory, but it's a real battle, and it's only thanks to pastors like you that we have a chance in this. But I really do believe we're right there right now.
Do you marvel? You've written on Luther, another great pastor that I have admired and read. You've written on Wilberforce. You've written on Bonhoeffer. I am so glad that your most recent book, I'm sure, is just connecting the battle of worldviews going on, as you just mentioned. Is it that simple in the sense that we see these same type of cycles and attacks, you know, the same type of state overreach or state injustice, and then it just takes conviction and nerve and a prophetic voice to just undo those things? Are
well, again, prophetic voices often go unheeded.
Right.
I mentioned Isaiah and Jeremiah. Bonhoeffer's voice was mostly ignored by the church, and some people woke up too late. Some people woke up 30 years later and said, wow, I guess we missed that. Maybe we'll get it right next time. Well, I have to tell you, the temptation to silence is constant. The temptation not to fight, there are always good reasons. Be more politically correct. Be more politically sensitive. Well, the fact of the matter is, real people are suffering because of the tyranny of Trudeau and Biden and many folks who, whether it's witting or unwitting, they are the enemies of freedom, and they've set themselves up as the enemies of God as they demonize the people of God, as they demonize the freedom that is a gift from God. In many, many ways, we can see this. And in the United States, what happened on January 6th, it's very similar to the Emergencies Act that you're talking about in Canada, which is similar to the Reichstag in the Bonhoeffer book. Something happens, and the powers that be immediately seize the narrative, and through lying and misinformation, they say, this is our opportunity to demonize and crush our opponents. And I think we have to understand this does happen over and over in history, and we have to fight that. We have to say, we will not accept this. We will go to jail. By the way, you can't kill us because we actually believe Jesus defeated death on the cross. So we're not afraid to die. We have to live out that faith. And I really didn't think that, you know, in February of 2022, we would be in a moment like this, but we are. And to frame it positively, this is the moment for the church to shine, for the church to rise up and to be the church. And we're not fighting for ourselves, let's be honest. There are people who are not Christians. There are people unborn. There are all kinds of people whose lives depend on what we do and say right now. And I just want to say to pastors who are disinclined to fight, folks, this is an opportunity. We are all tempted to look the other way, but this is an opportunity for you. I just want to say, I say it affectionately, but you know, before when I said, you know, you don't want to be a bum. I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just saying that this is a real moment where our characters and our faiths are being tested. And I don't want anybody to miss it. I don't want any pastor, 5 years from now to think, you know what? Oof, I think Eric was right. I think Bonhoeffer was right. I think Pastor Thiessen was right. I didn't see it at the time. I want those pastors to see it now by the grace of the Lord, that just the Holy Spirit would help them to see that this is a serious inflection point for the church. That this is a moment where God is speaking, and He allows us to get it wrong if we insist, but the Lord wants us to get it right.
It's interesting. I can hear the tension in your personality and in your, you know, your prophetic voice. Is, you know, the prophets got frustrated with the people, and sometimes they said, come on, you bums, like, get going. And then, of course, there's this grace and theological reflection on the Word of God that says, but we want you to be faithful. Like, throughout this entire time, I've always thought, when everyone says to me, Mike, this isn't the hill we should die on, I always just think of Luke 16:10, whoever can be trusted trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, but whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. If you won't train, like if I can't do 10 sit-ups today, like I've got an 18-year-old boy who could pound out 100 sit-ups or something like that. If I go to him and say, hey, let's have a sit-up contest by the end of the week, and the day before I try to pound out 10, he's showing up the next day ready to put a new car on the competition, because it's just you train. That's what training is. But I want to transition from that thought of like compelling people to be faithful into this intriguing part of the book that, of course, is so difficult for everybody to navigate. It's another nuanced conversation, and that is Dietrich Bonhoeffer's spy. That is clandestine behavior. That is Underground Railroad, moving people in and out of countries for their protection.
Right.
Do you want to just dive right into any thoughts on that?
I think this is the classic thing, and I talk about this a lot. A lot of Christians, I assume in Canada, certainly in the United States, have gotten a very, very wrong idea in their heads. This is bad theology, that somehow faith is divorced from politics, or my faith is not, I'm not supposed to be political. That is from the pit of hell. That is not correct. And if it's not correct theology, it's from the pit of hell. And I say it strongly because there are people during slavery times, they were wondering, are any of these Christians, do they really believe that Bible? Because if they did, they'd get political yesterday for me and my children who are suffering. In Germany, Jews in boxcars going to the death camps, they were probably wondering, I wonder if any of those Christians out there are not hypocrites. I wonder if any of them out there would be willing to stick their necks out. Well, a lot of the Christians at the time thought, well, I don't want to get political. That's the voice of the devil. We are called by God to do what is right. If somebody else wants to shut you up by saying, oh, that's political, it's your job, it's your duty before God to ignore that. We're called to fight evil. Now, we're not called to fight evil in the flesh, but God calls us to do that. And I really think that we have somehow gotten in bed with bad theology that says we never really have to pay a price. If I know how to play the game, I'll be able to woo my neighbor, into accepting Jesus without ever having to say anything. And listen, that's nice. I get that. But there is a time when you have to throw that out the window and just say, Lord, what is the right thing to do right now? I think because my mom and dad, my previous book, it's called Fish Out of Water, and it's about the story of my life growing up and coming to faith. And that came out about a year ago. And I bring it up because my mother grew up in Nazi Germany, which became East Germany under the Soviet communist oppression. My father grew up in Greece during the war. He saw the communists up close. Then the communists tried to take over Greece after the end of World War II. So both my parents saw the evil of communism. And when I say communism, I mean atheistic big state-ism. They saw that up close. And you don't need to be an evangelical Christian to know it is evil, it is wicked, it is harmful, it is the enemy. We need to do anything we can to stay free. So they raised me and my brother John to understand that. They weren't working hard to make us understand it. They would just tell us the stories of what they saw growing up. And when I went to East Germany, which I write about in the book, I went to East Germany when I was 8, and I saw the barbed wire fence and the dogs when we went across the border into East Germany. And I thought, wow, what my parents have told me is true. They're trying to keep people in. They are, these people are not free. This is real. This is not just some fantasy. This is real. And my mother and father saw it and lived it, and they taught me and my brother about it. And I think anybody who has seen real evil and has seen what can happen when atheist communism, whether it's cultural Marxism, whatever it is, whether it's masks behind, Prime Minister Trudeau talking about, oh, we want to defeat the misinformation of these terrible pro-lifers. The point is that when you smell that, you say, I've smelled this before. This is evil. And I need to stand against this. But I think if you haven't lived that, you kind of think, well, I don't know that I should really get involved in this or get in. The reason Bonhoeffer got involved in this political way, because he was wise enough to understand sometimes the Lord does his best work outside the mainstream church, right? In other words, if you want to fight against evil, you want to fight for the oppressed, sometimes the church isn't going to get it. Sometimes pastors aren't going to get it, but God still calls you to fight. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that right now. A lot of people who are, they went to some church and they thought it was fine. But then when these draconian measures came in through COVID in the United States, a stolen election, even the appearance of a stolen election, they said, wait a minute, we need to speak up. And many pastors said, no, we're not going to talk about that here. We don't want to get political. And I think a lot of those people said, you know what, then I'm going to go outside the church. I'm going to join a Patriots movement, or I'm going to be part of the truckers convoy, because they get it. They get it. They understand that we're in a battle. And if you don't fight, you're helping the enemy. So it's a real kind of threshing that is going on right now. I also think that a lot of people who are patriots, who love freedom, who are trying to raise their kids, they are themselves starting to realize, like, those crazy Christians, they get it right. I'm starting to see that, you know, the nice atheist and the nice agnostic, they can be really brutal, and they're putting in policies that are harming me and my children, and I've got to fight, and so I'm going to join their team. So there's a kind of a sifting going on right now. But Bonhoeffer, we have to remember, he was vilified in his day. There were people who thought, how can a man of God get involved in a plot to go against the head of state? What's wrong with him? Didn't he forget that, you know, the first commandment, you're supposed to be nice, you're supposed to bow to the dictator? Didn't they read that how, you know, Daniel, you know, told Nebuchadnezzar whatever he wanted? I mean, over and over and over again, we see these lessons in Scripture of people standing against tyranny, injustice, lies, evil, and they say, I believe the Lord will back me up. He will save me. But if not, I will still follow what God calls me to do. It's kind of crazy that we're in a moment like that right now, but there's no doubt. There are people suffering all across this world because of tyranny and tyrannous behavior. And some people are waking up and some people aren't. And to me, the Bonhoeffer book, when I wrote it, I never dreamt that it would be kind of like a prophetic roadmap. But right now I just think, oh my goodness, it's astonishing. And I don't ever want to forget, and I don't want anyone to forget, Bonhoeffer was not lionized in his day. There were many, many, many people who just thought, he's off. He's gone outside the camp. He's crazy. Well, sometimes you're going to look crazy, but you have to worry about what God thinks. You can't worry about what other people think. And Bonhoeffer genuinely, and Luther, feared God and worried about what God thought. And they said, if you can burn me or kill me or do whatever you want, I'm going to worry about what God thinks. And by the way, if I get it wrong, I believe God will have mercy on me. So I'm just going to do what I think the Lord calls me to do. And I'm going to let people vilify me. That's the price maybe that I have to pay right now. It's not a small price when we think of the price that people have paid.
You mentioned bad theology a few times. A few things that brings to my mind is, the simple dualism. I know that Bonhoeffer's book, The Cost of Discipleship, and the difference between costly grace and chief grace, the difference between sloganizing Christianity and living it out. You know, we tend to, I know David Wells from Gordon Conwell has written a book called The God in the Wasteland, and he references the God in my knapsack, or the God on my back, rather than the transcendent God of the universe who is in control and cares for the entire world. And when we privatize faith, then it tends to make us feel good about ourselves, but we don't get involved in the real world. And then the other thing you mentioned was many Christians are called, much of the Christian life is lived outside of the walls of the church. And so a churchianity that is so focused on church programs and everything centralized from the church seems to devalue honest mechanics who fix cars for single moms and lawyers who go out and make good law and politicians.
It really is bad theology. We saw it. I mean, obviously in the United States, the most dramatic example is you have Donald Trump be the most heroically pro-life president in the history of the United States. I can't tell you about the condition of his heart before God, but I can tell you this. Sometimes God will use a thrice married philandering New York real estate developer to show the church what courage looks like, to shame the church, just as he wanted to shame his chosen people by going to the Gentiles. Often God goes outside the church, outside the camp, and you see it over and over and over again. And I want to say that part of what you're referring to with David Wells, and I mean, honestly, a lot of evangelicals, part of our part of the decline of theology is when, you know, we talk about orthodoxy, but what about orthopraxy? Do you think that you can say, I believe all these things, it's all about grace, and it's all about what I believe, it's all about faith? And, you know, the Lord looks at us and says, I look on your heart. I don't look on the statement of faith on the website of your church. That's a fig leaf. I look on your heart. And by the way, I, the Lord, and the devil can look at your actions and can see exactly what you believe by how you live. So if you don't live out your faith, then the question becomes, do you have that faith that you think you do? Can you claim to have that faith if you're not living it? If you don't live it, I think the Lord is pretty harsh in Scripture. I was reading 1 John a couple of days ago, and I thought, wow, it's pretty clear. It's saying if you do not live apart from sin, if you do not live out your faith, you actually have no faith. So evangelicals have kind of acted as though, well, we've got this intellectual faith. We've kind of intellectualized it and made it very cerebral. That's not biblical. That's not at all biblical. Biblical is you will live out your faith. Whatever you believe or don't believe, it will be obvious in how you live. And so this idea that, well, there's grace to cover that or grace to cover this, it's kind of playing a game with God's grace, and it is cheap grace. And Bonhoeffer, and I know the Lord, looks at it pretty harshly. When you think of Jesus's death on the cross, if you take that for granted even slightly, the grace, that's really, really ugly. And I think we have to be careful. And I think the Western church has been particularly guilty of this, the evangelicals in particular, that we have really made it all about what I claim I believe in my head. And I think the Lord is saying that I know that if you don't live out your faith in a way that I see it self-sacrificially, I know that you don't have the faith that maybe you think you do. So that is terrible theology. And I really do think that the Lord is spotlighting it right now. He's saying that, you know, if you have all your Bible studies and all this stuff, it is utterly irrelevant if when the time comes, you are not willing to show the agape love of Jesus, which is to say self-sacrificial love, to say, yes, I could lose my job. Yes, I could lose a friendship. Yes, I could. I don't lose these things cavalierly. These are real prices to be paid. But Lord, thy will be done. We are at that moment. I think that we have we've just come to a point where the Lord has forced us to say, what do I really believe? It's a clarifying moment. But I want to exhort people, folks, if you don't live out your faith, if you don't take those risks, it's clear you don't really trust the Lord in that. And so this is it's a tough moment. But I do want to say that if the Lord really does look on your heart, you really can't go wrong. If you try to please him in what sometimes might be radical ways or drastic ways, the Lord loves you. And even if you screw it up a little bit, he really does see your heart. So I do feel that the Lord has brought us to a place in the Western church where we're forced to see that to claim to have faith, but not to live it out in these ways. I mean, that's what Bonhoeffer was all about, that you just mentioned it when he wrote about cheap grace, but he actually lived it out. He was actually willing to lose friends and eventually to lose his freedom and his life because he said, you can't outgive God. God, I know God is real. I don't hope he's real. I know he's real. And I think that the Bonhoeffer story, it's God's way of encouraging us to say, like, look, he did it. It's inspiring. This is, by the way, this is why I put you on the planet, to live like this, to live free for me, knowing that whatever you suffer for me will be given to you 1,000-fold. Fear not. Fear not.
Well, Eric, I just want to say I own the 1,100-page Bethke biography. And and when you're
the 5-pound paperback.
Oh my gosh, you know what? I've been re-listening to your book because I read them both, and then I've been re-listening to yours because I got the Audible. And when you said that, when your book said that, and whoever read your book on Audible said it, yeah. I literally picked up the book and it's like, yeah, that is 5.5 pounds. But I just want to say, I want to thank you because your perspective and your prose that you write are refreshing, and your commentary, like the way that you're delivering Bonhoeffer, is just it allows you to get so many visual pictures. Like you use so many personifications in there, and I just, there's so many times where I said, man, I'm really appreciating the writing of Mr. Metaxas here, and just so enjoying it. So I just want to say thank you, because after I read Bethke, I never thought I'd need to pick up another Bonhoeffer biography. But I can understand why
pastors can read the Bethke book. I mean, the Bethke book. Look, there's nobody greater than Eberhard Bethke and his book. But in terms of readability, the reason I wrote my book was I said, people that will never be able to get through 1,100 pages of pretty dense writing, they need to know the story of Bonhoeffer. Yeah. Everybody needs to know the story of this hero of the faith, because we need to be inspired by that story. So that is why I wrote my book. But I tip my hat, I bow before the great Eberhard Bethke. If he hadn't written his book, which is like a reference work, I never could have written my book. So there's no question that I acknowledge his greatness on every level. But I did specifically write my book on Bonhoeffer and many of my books because I thought this needs to be communicated in a way that's fun, that's inspiring, that people who are not scholars, can get something out of it. So I appreciate your saying that very much.
Well, and it's sincere. I'm not just trying to butter your scones here. I actually, I read it and I go, man, if I was telling a story, that's the way that I would want to tell it. You're doing a great job. And I went and downloaded the Audible for Luther, and I went and downloaded the Audible for William Wilberforce today as well, just as I was having a refresher, because I wasn't aware that you had written those two previous books. So I'm really excited about that. So I'm going to be listening to you as I do some
And every driving. One of my books has been translated into Canadian. I just want to be very clear. Yeah, that's very stupid.
Well, and on that point, you do use enough big words that a resident thesaurus in the vicinity is required once in a while. So, great job. Thanks for coming on. Why don't I give you just a few last words here?
Well, let me say this. Because our program was wiped off of YouTube, that's the Eric Metaxas Show, I interview all kinds of people. It's not normally as intense as this conversation. Some of them are intense. Some of them are fun. But the whole thing was wiped off of YouTube. We had 220,000 subscribers, and YouTube said, we're going to wipe that out. That tells you what you need to know about where they're coming from. And so I want to say to people, please go to my website. It's just my name, ericmetaxas.com. If you go to ericmetaxas.com, you can sign up for my newsletter, and I can get these interviews to you. Once or twice a week, we send out. I've just had extraordinary interviews with important people. So it's banned from YouTube, but we put it on Rumble. And if you go to ericmetaxas.com and sign up for the newsletter, it'll be sent to you, along with all kinds of other things, no advertisements or anything, but just ericmetaxas.com. I think it's valuable to people, and I just want to make sure that since I'm tougher to find these days, that people are aware of that.
No, it's very important. We had a great launch to our podcast with these Canadian doctors, and we got canceled from YouTube. And then it's been a pretty hard slog to get to the Rumble channel. I think we're just breaching the 5,000 subscriber mark. Now, whatever it is in America, you have to translate it. You have to divide it by 10. So if you have a football stadium filled with 100,000 people, a good attendance in a Canadian football game would be 10,000. That's also because the Canadian Football League sucks. But so all that to say, I know how it's really hard work, and I'm thank you for mentioning that, folks. Make sure you go to Eric's website and make sure you go to his Rumble channel and sign up and subscribe, because I just want to support your work, and so thankful for you. Thanks for having this conversation with us and being so supportive.
Listen, all the books that I wrote, I really do believe in retrospect, the Lord called me to write them to inspire his people. That when you read the story of Bonhoeffer, it's hard not to be inspired by that. I think the Bonhoeffer book is at the top of the list, but many of my books, the most recent one that I mentioned is Atheism Dead. I really think it's an encouragement to people to realize that, you know, the preposterous idea, the ridiculous idea that maybe there's no God or that the atheists have a point, we all bought that a little bit. Well, in this book, I kind of proved to myself, I thought, it's just crazy. The evidence for God is outrageous. You have no idea. And again, if you want to know that, if you're living in a world that's really run by secular elites who are pushing out this misinformation, we need to know, no. God has given us ample evidence for himself. I mean, it's not even close, and we need to rejoice. But again, in writing these books and in doing these talks, we have to get the message out. And that's part of what the church's job is too, is that we have to communicate these things to everybody, because there are plenty of people that they don't self-identify as evangelicals, whatever, but they're still hungry for truth, for meaning. They're looking around, they're trying to see, you know, do these people really believe that stuff? Is this real? So, you know, now's a moment for the church to be utterly real and true and transparent. And I believe we are on the verge of revival in the West, in places like Canada and the United States and other places. I really do believe that, but the Lord had to allow us to go through this battle right now in order for that to happen. So praise the Lord.
That's awesome. One thing that I've been exploring for the last 2 years is presuppositional apologetics, which is that we stand on the Word of God by faith. We presuppose his word is true for everything. And then once we have that, so that means that when, you know, someone tells me a lie, I presuppose that their conscience is going to be seared and or going to be convicted, and I can appeal to their conscience. But then moving from presuppositional apologetics, you can go into evidential apologetics, because we can so easily demonstrate for people that both the Christian life and then God's design for the world is so powerfully obvious. So I'm glad you've written that book, and
let's not forget Paul did it, right? Paul, you know, he appealed to the pagan poets who are now enshrined in scripture. It's like everything points to the Lord. All truth points to the one who is truth. And I think that now is a time when we in the church are ourselves kind of waking up to that more. And, you know, to live out the truth of God totally, to realize that's why we're on this planet, and not to miss even a little bit of it. So it is an opportunity for us, what we're going through right now. I want to say that. I want to invite people. I want to say this is an amazing opportunity. Please do not miss it.
Awesome. Well, everybody, thanks for listening and thanks for tuning in. Pray that you have a blessed day, and that this interview has been both a warning and a blessing to you and an inspiration to you. So thanks, Eric, for coming on, and everybody, Godspeed.